Okay, we are going to begin now the third parak, the Lulav HaGadol. The first two prakim then, okay. The parak Lulav HaGadol, we're starting the third parak. The first two prakim, we're talking about the dinim of Sukkah. Now we're going to be talking this parak and most of the next parak about the dinim of the Dalad Minim.
Finished with the Sukkah.
For now. Well, yes and no. The Mishnah is finished with the Sukkah pretty much, except we'll have a little bit more about it in Perek Dalet about what you do with it at the end of Sukkah. But we are going to have, actually tomorrow, we'll have a Sugya about a Sukkah, about a stolen Sukkah, connecting with our Mishnah, which talks about a stolen Lulav. So, the Mishnah says, Lulav HaGadol, stolen Lulav, Vayavish, or dry Lulav, puzzle. Our puzzle. And we'll discuss in the Gemara each one of them. Some of them we'll talk about now or in the course of things. Stolen lulav. So we have to, as by way of background, there's a number of issues. There's a number of dinim that apply across the board to the dalad minim. Number one is the concept of lachem, which is that the minim have to belong to you. Now, the Torah only says lachachem lachem, it only says vayom harishon, on the first day. So therefore, if there's an issue involving lachem, it should apply only on the first day. No, even midrabanan. Wait, we'll get there. Number two, there's the issue of that it has to be by the Esther, which is the first one on the list. The Torah says it has to be pre-Eitz Hadar, the fruit of a beautiful tree. We'll learn on Daf Lamed Hey exactly all the different possibilities of what Hadar, of the deeper meanings of Hadar, but on the simple level, Hadar means beautiful, and therefore we learn from that that the Esther has to be a beautiful fruit. It has to have, that it can't have spots on it, etc., as we'll learn about when we get to it.
Is it the only fruit?
Yaakov saw.
No, of course not. But it's not the only fruit that's beautiful. Of course not, and that's why the Gemara is going to explain. I mean, that we know that it's an Esther because Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai. The Rambam points out that Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai is something on which there never was and never will be any kind of machlokas. Nobody ever, from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, Adai Yemazen, nobody has ever taken anything else as an Esther. So we know the Kabbalah, generation, that that's what an Esther is. But still, we'll have next week that the Gemara is going to show how the word Hadar itself refers to the Esther tree and no other. Anyway, so that's one thing. But because the Dal Minim into one Pasuk, therefore we also learn that the Din of Hadar doesn't just apply to the Esther, it applies to all of the Dal Minim. They all have to be Hadar, they all have to be beautiful, each in their own way. And some of the things that we'll be talking about in this Mishnah, and the next three Mishnayos, the problem with them is that the full word has to be not Jack, mind muting your phone? There's a lot of background noise. Thanks. So far we have, there's Lachem, there's Hadar. Rashi points out there's another matter also, that more generally, mitzvahs, you have to have Zekei Levan Veyu. You have to make the mitzvah as beautiful as possible. So that Tosfos discusses, well, how does that fit with Hadar? Is Hadar something specific to the Dalad Minim? Zekei Levan Veyu seems to be a generic thing. On the other hand, Zekei Levan Veyu is not necessarily something that would make it possible. You're just supposed to make it as beautiful as possible. It's not ma'akev, whereas Hadar might well be. So there's that. There's also another issue, which again, we'll get to examples of all of these as we go through the parak. But there's another issue. The Torah starts off, "Lakach tem lachem." You should take for yourselves. So besides the lachem, is that we learn that has to be yours. But also the word "lakach tem," we darshan it as if it said "lakach tom." You should take something that's perfect, and therefore some of the psulim that apply to the lulav and the other minim are because the thing is not perfect. Even if you have, there's a certain detail, it doesn't prevent it from being hodo, it doesn't prevent it from being beautiful, but it's not perfect. That's what we're saying. It can be one without the other.
Tum means perfect.
Tum means perfect. Like an animal, like a tum, yeah.
You're always obligated to take something.
When the Torah says a lakach tum, yeah, we do the same thing as far as other things also. For example, when we say in the Torah, uchsav tum amazuzet pesachah obisharecha, we learn from that it has to be ksiva tama, it has to be a perfect writing. Every letter has to be surrounded by white space, every letter has to be perfectly formed, that it shouldn't look like another letter, etc. We learned about that in Shabbos. So yeah, so a lot of times when you have a verb like that the Torah ends with tum, We doubt or tem or tum, we doubt shenetz to mean that. So that means that has to be perfect.
Perfect if possible. Not perfect.
Well, obviously, yeah. So therefore, and then there's other considerations also. You have each of the minim, as we'll learn later in the parak, has a minimum shear, there's a minimum size for it. So therefore, you have to have minimum size, obviously. But therefore, also, we'll see in the Mishnah and in subsequent Mishnayos that there are things that are considered to not be the proper size. So you have that as well. And then for each min, you have individual things of its own that do or don't make it harder. So, lulav hagadol, a stolen lulav, v'hayavish, or dry lulav, pasul. Both of those are pasul. A stolen one we'll learn about in the Gemara, the details about it, whether the problem is lachem, in which case it would only be a problem the first day, or whether it's a problem of that's a mitzvah haba ba'aveira, in which case it might apply to all the days. As far as a yavish, there's a number of different explanations why. Rashi says it's because you have to have that keli v'aveira, you have to make the mitzvah beautiful. Tosfos says if that's the issue, then that's only you're supposed to make it beautiful, not that it's ma'akev, not that it would make it possible. So Tosfos instead says the reason is because not hadar. Hadar, the specific thing that applies to the etrog, and from it we generalize to the other minim, a dry lulav, not hadar. And some mafarshim also bring something that the Yerushalmi says on this. The Yerushalmi says, why is a dry lulav possible? Because a dry lulav is dead. And the pasuk says, we say in Halal, Lo Yamesim, Yahalal Lukah, the dead can't praise Hashem. So it would be inappropriate to be holding a dry, dead lulav and say Halal.
Not only a lulav, then an etrog.
Right, it applies to all the minim, indeed. We're starting with the lulav, perhaps just because the whole thing is called, we call Amatilaf lulav because it's the tallest. There's a famous sikha where it ever talks about why that is, because the lulav represents the person who focuses on learning Torah, and that's the most important thing of all. Talmud Torah connected kolam. Whatever it is, so Mepashtus, that's why the Mishnah starts with the lulav. But then, yeah, we'll have some of these things are going to be repeated by each of the minim. Yeah. How dry does it have to be in order to be possible? That also Tosfos discusses over here, and other Rishonim discuss as well. Is it, Tosfos brings one possibility, maybe if it's 12 months old, it's already considered dry. We find that in connection with certain other halachas, 12 months is already enough for something to be considered dry. Another possibility is when it's so dry that it would crumble if you press on it with your fingernail. Other Rishonim argue with that. The Ravid, I think, says, you know, I mean, lulavim are not like that. No matter how dry a lulav gets, it's never going to get crumbly. It'll just get hard. So he gives, therefore other mafarshim from other possibilities. It's when it turns completely white, or it's when there's absolutely no moisture left in it, which kind of amounts to the same thing. So Shulchan Aruch brings all these various possibilities. I mean, luckily you use a fresh one, but b'di'evet, you know, then you make do with one of the other possibilities.
Which one? Would Tosfos
talk
about that?
The Tosfos brings the possibility either that it's 12 months or that it's so dry that it breaks apart when you rub it with your fingernail.
But which Tosfos?
The first one, Lulav Yavish Pasul. Yeah. Okay. Next one, Shel Asherah, a lulav from an Asherah. An Asherah is a tree that's worshipped as an Avodah Zarah, which the Torah says you have to destroy them, you have to burn them. We'll talk about in the Gemara in a couple of days exactly what kind of Asherah we're talking about. But be that as it may, the idea is, so from an Asherah, v'shal ira nidachas, or a lulav from an ira nidachas, a city that where most of the people worship the Avodah Zarah and it has to be burnt, and all the things in the city have to be burnt, is also possible. In those cases, the reason is, even though you have a physical lulav in front of you, which is the right size, the problem with it is, both of those things are supposed to be burnt. So therefore, Halacha considers it as if it's already burnt. If it's already burnt, then it doesn't have the right shear of a lulav. A lulav has a certain minimum size, and the size is not the pile of ashes. So therefore, you can't use it.
Why doesn't it just say Avodah Zarah?
Because Avodah Zarah is not so simple. We'll talk about it in the Gemara. Imagine, for example, I'll give you an example. What if, for example, somebody took a lulav and used it as a broom? They used to use lulavim as brooms, as we'll see in a minute in the Mishnah. Somebody takes a lulav and uses it as a broom to sweep the floor in front of an Avodah Zarah. Does that make it possible to use as a lulav for sukkahs? Not necessarily. So you get the Mishnah can't just say the blanket statement shall have a desirah. It has to be the kind that specifically has to be burnt where there's nothing else that can be done with it. We'll get to it in a couple of days, Bez Hashem. Continues the Mishnah. Niktam Roshoy, if the top of the lulav was chopped off. So, now what top do we mean? What top do we mean? Tosfos talks about two possibilities. Either that it means the top the middle leaf, the tumus, that we always look for when we get a lulav. We always try to make sure that that one is unsplit. We'll look about that in the Gemara. The
Tosfos says, complicated. Everyone's looking for
right. The Tosfos says the first possibility is that nixam roshe means that those middle leaves that were chopped off. Second possibility, Tosfos says, is that most of the tops of most of the leaves along the lulav were chopped off. And then I think the Ravid brings a third possibility that it means that the shedra itself, the top of the shedra itself, the top of the spine of the lulav itself is chopped off, which means, in other words, according to him, even if the leaves are missing, the spine, as long as the spine is intact.
The spine, as long as what?
As long as the shedra, the spine of the lulav is intact.
That's the
Ravid.
The
Ravid. Yeah. Tosfos brings two possibilities: either that it means the top middle leaf, or it means the tops of most of the individual leaves. Or actually, halacha. The halacha mentions all of these things. But clearly, you're supposed to use a lulav that doesn't have any of these problems.
But they don't all the side ones.
Yeah, most of the side ones are chopped off. Then also, you have a problem. Yeah. Nifritzu olav. Another case: if the leaves of the lulav are torn off, so Rashi says means they're completely torn off for the shedra. They're just, you know, like, you tie them together to make like a broom. People used to do that in those days. They'd take a lulav, they'd strip off the leaves, they'd tie a few of them to the end of the thing and use it as a makeshift broom.
As lulav and a broom?
No. We're talking about through the year they would use it as a broom. But now we're talking about you want to use it on sukkahs, so that's puzzle.
Uh-huh.
So Rashi says that's what we're talking about, where the leaves are actually torn off the shedra. Other beforeshim say it doesn't even have to be that. The Rambam, for example, writes that it doesn't even have to be they're completely torn off the shedra. It just means they're drooping down. It means they're torn off enough that they're not. We'll learn the next thing in the Mishnah is that if they're still growing in their natural configuration, even though they're sticking out, then it's fine. But here we're talking about they're torn off to the extent that they're hanging down. So they're still somewhat attached, but not completely. And Tosfos brings up another possibility. We know anybody who looks at a lulav knows that each of the leaves is made up of two pieces that are joined together on one end. So, Nifritzu olav, Tosfos says, another possibility would be if most of those double leaves on the lulav are broken into two, are split into their two component leaves.
But the Mishnah says Nifritzu olav.
Nifritzu is the next thing. That's Nifritzu. There's Nifritzu and Nifritzu.
Yeah.
Nifritzu means, so there's three possibilities. Again, either it means that the leaves are completely torn off, according to Rashi, or they're drooping down, according to Rambam, or most of the leaves are broken, are split up into their component leaves instead of being a double leaf, instead of being like each leaf is normally like a V shape, like this, when you look at it. Right? You have, you know, two half leaves that are joined together at one end. So if most of those are pulled apart, then that would be nifritzu olav. So all those are possible. Nifridu olav, but if the leaves are only spread apart, then it's kosher. Nifridu olav means like this. If you ever look at a palm tree, you'll see you have the top, the middle of the palm tree is where the lulavim grow. There the lulav grows, of course, as we all, you know, all the lulavim that we see on sukkahs have the leaves fairly tightly together. As the tree starts growing, as the branches get more and more mature, then the leaves start opening up. They start spreading away from the shedra, so that instead of having them tightly against the shedra, as we're used to seeing them, it ends up looking like this.
Right. They start opening up.
They start opening up, basically.
Right.
So that's kosher. They're still in their normal, natural configuration. They're not tightly bound together like they were originally, but they are still growing in the normal way that they do. So that's kosher. Rabbi Yehuda says no. You do have to tie them together on top. He agrees such a lulav is kosher, but you have to, because the point of the machlokes is, we're learning in the Gemara, the Torah calls the lulav, instead of using the word lulav, the Torah calls it kapos tmarim, which means a branch from a palm tree. The word kapos is written without a vav, which means that we can read it as if it said kafus, tied together. So therefore, that's why we're saying machatchila, you're supposed to use one where the leaves are actually like as if they were tied together with the shedra, like they're all straight along it. They're all bound together naturally.
Mm-hmm.
What we're saying is, if they're spread apart, okay, they're not bound together naturally, but they are still growing together. That's fine. Rabbi Yehuda is saying no, you still have to fulfill this that we say as if it said kafus. So you do have to actually bend the leaves back up towards the shedra and tie them together.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's why we put the rings?
No, the rings is just to hold the minim together. That's a different matter. Yeah.
No, the ring to the.
Oh, the ring is closer to the top.
Yeah.
That's more so that when you're shaking it, it doesn't go all over the place, you know. And in fact, we take them off before Hallel on Shana Rabbah, in order that everyone's explained about that, because the shaking of the lulav shows your simcha, and on Shana Rabbah you want to show extra simcha, you want to like shake it as much as possible, so you take off those rings. But yeah, continues the Mishnah. Sinei Hara Barzel, the hard lulavim from Hara Barzel, from the mountain of iron. And the Gemara, we'll learn in the Gemara that these are a kind of lulavim that have very short leaves. Normally, a lulav has very long leaves. You know, the leaves extend a good part of the way up the shedra. Here, it has much shorter leaves. Sometimes you have where the leaves barely, like one row of leaves barely reaches the beginning of the next row.
Uh-huh.
So those are still ksheiras. Those are still kosher. Let's see if they have a picture of it.
I'm picturing a very short lulav.
It's not that it's short lulav. A short lulav is going to be the next thing. What we're talking about is a lulav that has very short leaves. That they barely, one group of leaves just barely reaches the beginning
of the
next.
Oh, wow, mamish a space. Oh, I didn't picture
that. No, so if there's a space, actually, we're learning the Gemara as possible. Mm-hmm. What's kosher is if it just reaches.
Yeah.
If they just overlap each other a bit, right. Now, in a normal lulav, you don't need that. They overlap each other a lot, but yeah.
That's helpful. Like an insurance plan, they have to lap each other, otherwise.
Lulav, the point is the whole shedra has to be covered with leaves.
Right.
Because otherwise it's not considered hotter. Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tefachim, a lulav that has at least three tefachim of length, kedei l'naneh bo, enough to wave it, and we'll learn in the Gemara, actually that means it has to be four tefachim total, three tefachim of lulav and then an extra tefach in order to wave it. It's kosher, that's the minimum size for it to be kosher.
Three tefachim. You can almost not see it.
Four tefachim altogether, yeah, it'd be very short, it'd be like maybe this tall. But yeah, that's the minimum size of a lulav, that's kosher.
Rashi says moving up and down, doesn't say anything about kiskos.
Okay.
Any,
right, technically you just need to move it in all the six directions, right? You don't actually have to shake the leaves, but yeah. So again, of all these things we learned in the Mishnah, we'll go through them in the Gemara over the next couple of days, but some of them are a problem because you have things that are problems because of each of the different factors that we talked about before. Some of them because of Lachem, some of them because it's not Hadar, some of them because it's not Lokach Tom, it's not a taking of something that's perfect, and yeah. And some of them for other reasons, for example, because there's no shear, like the one from the Asherah. So starting with the stolen one, the Gemara says, Kaposik Vitani. The Mishnah is just saying a blanket statement that a stolen lulav is possible. Or all of them actually it's just saying as a blanket statement are possible. Loishan of Yom Tov Rishon, Veloishan of Yom Tov Sheni. No difference between the first day of Yom Tov and all the other days. Now again, we have to consider we'll learn closer to the end of this parak, that minat Torah, you only have to take the lulav one day outside the Bais Hamikdash and 7 days in it. Midrabanan, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, made a takana after the Bais Hamikdash was destroyed, that we take the lulav all seven days, Zeichel Hamikdash. So therefore, some mafarshim discuss over here, when we talk about these various psulim, which of them apply only on the first day, whether everywhere else or in the Bais Hamikdash, which of them apply the other days. And so as we'll go through the next couple of lines, we'll see some possibilities.
Kaposik means what?
Kaposik means like it's just saying a blanket, it's just stating. It's just stating without any further detail. The Loshon of Yom Tov Rishon, the Loshon of Yom Tov Sheni, that these Tzulim, there's no difference between the first day and the other days. So we have to consider, Bishleim Yavesh, I can understand why Yavesh would be a problem with dry lulav, Hadar, Bein, and Vlaka, because it has to be Hadar, and you don't have that. A dry lulav is not Hadar. Ella Gozel, but how about a stolen lulav? The Shlema Yom Tov Rishon. I can understand why it's possible on the first day of Sukkot. Dichtiv Lachem, because the pasuk says Lokachtam Lachem B'Yom Rishon, and Lachem means Mishalachem. It has to be yours. Ella B'Yom Tov Sheni Amayloi. But if it's on the second day or any of the other days of Sukkot, then why not? So here's where Rashi says the first day and the rest of the days, Rashi is going according to that we're talking everywhere outside the Bais Hamikdash. So the first day is Deraisa, the other days are Derabanan. So we can understand, okay, really, the other days, none of the Psulim should apply because the whole thing is only Derabanan. Fine, the Chachamim want to tell us that Yavesh is possible the other days, then fine. But if Lachem only applies the first day anyway, because it's only Lokachtam Lachem B'Yom Rishon, Then why are we making it apply to the other days also? And then Tosfos discusses the idea. So, among other things, Tosfos discusses Lachem and Hadar are both in the same pasuk. Lachem Lachem Bayemirish and Priyat Hadar. What's the logic to say that Lachem only applies on the first day, but Hadar should apply to all the days? It should apply. Either they should apply to all the days, or they should apply only to the one day. Right. 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 So Tosfos discusses the issue that what we're talking about is true. We are talking about the first day versus the other days, meaning outside the Beis Mikdash. The difference is Tosfos says that something like when it comes to Hadar, yes, the Chachamim, because it's a matter of Hidur Mitzvah, then the Chachamim imposed it on the other days of Yom Tov also. Lachem, which is only, even though by rights it should only apply to the first day, Minat Torah. You know, even in the Beis Mikdash. But when it comes to Lachem, then we're only gonna impose. So when it comes to it being borrowed, we only impose that on the first day. The other days you can borrow a lulav and Esther. But as far as stealing, that we're talking about, we'll talk about whether it's a problem of mitzvah, ba veda, or other issues. Other mafarshim discuss the possibilities, maybe that you know we might be talking about in the Beis Mikdash, where all 7 days are d'oraisa. Anyway, Amar Rabbi Yochanan and Meshumer Rabbi Shimon Yochai.
Oh, in the Beis Mikdash, every day lachem, you're
saying? No. That's what different mafarshim discuss. Does lachem apply all 7 days in the Beis Mikdash, where we're taking luluv as midaraisa, or maybe not? Maybe both lachem and hadar only apply in atorah on the first day. But the chachamim extended hadar to the rest of the days, but they didn't extend lachem to the rest of the days.
It really goes well with what you see with a lot of things in the Beis Mikdash. A lot of things in the Beis Mikdash are meant to stress, not like a clean has to look very good. That would very much go along with it.
Okay. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan Meshum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, Meshum to have like mitzvah ba avera, because it's a mitzvah that comes through an avera. Shenemar, and you can't use something that happened through an avera for a mitzvah. Shenemar,
that's
a general rule. That's what we're talking about. Gozel, yeah. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, the navi criticizes the Jewish people. Vahaveisim gozel, you bring stolen animals as korbanos. And you're bringing lame animals, which are bali mumin, or sick animals, which are not technically possible for a korban, but it's not the covered dick to the Eibishter. One second. One second. Gozel dumya to piseach. So the pasuk puts together the stolen and the lame. Ma piseach lesle takanta, in order to imply that just like a lame animal, there's no takana. We're not talking about the Torah. The pasuk could have mentioned any other mum. But some mumin can be healed. When an animal is lame, though, then generally speaking, that's it. It's, you know. So once it became a bal mum, that's it. It can never become kosher or the korban again. Af gozel lesle takanta. So also a stolen animal, there's no takana. And here's the key point: loishna litne yirsh, loishna la'achav yirsh. It doesn't matter whether it's before or after yirsh. Now yirsh is when a person. Yush means, Yush is when a person has lost something. It can be a person lost something, you know, as they lost it on the street, or it can be it was stolen or whatever it is. Yush is when the person gives up hope of getting it back. Now Rashi explains it. For example, the person says, "Vayle lechesrin kif, achen vei, I lost this. I'm not going to get it back." Now the rule is that. The rule is that yirsh is enough to make the gazlan gain a kinyan on what he stole. Before yirsh, the gazlan has to return the actual object itself. After yirsh, depending on the cases, we'll talk about as we go through the Gemara, sometimes he only has to return the monetary value of it. He actually owns the object now. But what we're saying is now that we're saying that gozel, we're implying there's no takana. So even after yirsh, even after the owner gives up hope of getting it back, you still can't bring it as a korban. Now, so actually, it's actually not so simple. There are Tosfos first of all points out there's two different kinds of mitzvah ba avera. First of all, one is where you actually the avera actually facilitates the mitzvah. Like here, you actually steal a lulav in order to use it for the mitzvah, which otherwise you wouldn't have had a lulav. And then you have a case of something which came about through an avera, you know, and now you want to do a mitzvah with it. One example that Tosfos brings is, for example, that you know, a person steals wheat and then bakes bread of it and then wants to take challah from it and say bracha on it. So there's that difference. There's that difference, first of all, between the different kinds of mitzvah bar baveira. So it's not. In other words, it's not. You know, we're saying right now that you can't use a stolen lulav. We're saying there's other days it's mitzvah bar baveira, and therefore you can't use it. But we'll see. It's not so simple. Other mafarshim also point out there is a difference. We don't always say. Sometimes we do actually say that something that was stolen and the person acquired by Yirsh, you can use for a mitzvah. The one distinction that some Rishonim make is between something that's meant for Ritzui, something that's meant to make you acceptable before Hashem, versus not, versus something that's just, you know, a kind of like a garden variety mitzvah. A korban is something you're bringing as a present to Hashem, that Hashem should accept you. Lulav you're bringing to your lulav also you're bringing that Hashem should favor us this coming year. So therefore, it's inappropriate to use something that's bar baveira for it. Whereas with some other mitzvahs, maybe that consideration doesn't necessarily apply.
Especially
so. Yeah. So the Gemara says, "Bishleim alifnei yirsh." Okay, I can understand why you can't bring a korban from an animal where the owner didn't even have yirsh yet, where therefore you, the goslin, have not yet even made a kinyan on this animal. Because Adam ki Yaakov mikem Amar Rahman, the pasuk says in this week's parasha, an Adam who brings a korban from you, the Torah says, v'lavdi dehu, and it's not yours. We know Rashi says on the pasuk over there that we learn from the word Adam, among other things, that just like Adam didn't bring anything stolen because everything in the world belonged to him, there was nobody else around for him to steal from. So the same way, you can't bring something stolen. But besides that, the pasuk is mikem that you bring from you, that has to be yours. And here, the animal doesn't belong to you. True, but nevertheless, though, that's we're saying that mitzvah bar baveira is an issue with that, whether the owner is actually getting the thing back or not.
Well, first of all, you deprive the owner of the possibility of making a mitzvah.
No, because okay.
And that doesn't return.
All right. There is that, yeah. But if it's after Yirsh, how can you be Yirsh? Didn't the Ganav already acquire it by Yirsh? Ella lav, so must it not be? Why are we saying that's possible? Mishum davle mitzvah bar baveira, because it's a mitzvah that came through an avera. So therefore, we see from that even when the lulav itself technically can be considered to belong to you, because you already the owner had Yirsh and therefore you acquired it, you still can't use it for the mitzvah because it's mitzvah bar baveira. No. We're not talking about a lost lulav. We're talking about somebody who stole the lulav. Yeah. He stole it, but, I mean, sometimes we can say, and we'll have this soon, actually, Rashi points it out, that, when somebody does get, the definition of gezel, according to Rashi anyway, is that the person actually takes it out of the other person's hand. So then, you know, there can be yirsh right away. The person right away realizes, you know, I'm not going to get it back from this guy. Whereas on the other hand, if it was a ganav, for example, it's not necessarily so simple anyway. In Bava Metzia, there's a whole discussion, there's a whole sugya between Abaya and Rava over there about yirsh shalom midas. In the case of a lost object, if you pick something up and you don't know for sure whether the owner had yirsh yet, do you have to return it or not? So if somebody, for example, stole something, if somebody broke into somebody's house in the middle of the night, for example, and stole his lulav, the guy doesn't even necessarily know about it yet, you can't necessarily say that there was yirsh. Well, yeah. Okay.
There,
the halacha is like a pie that Yir Shalem Adas is not considered Yirsh.
What is that?
The Yir Shalem Adas, it says there, that if you don't know whether the owner has had Yirsh yet, then it doesn't count.
How could
it
count if the owner doesn't know that?
Because we don't know. That's the thing. If we don't know yet whether the owner had Yirsh. We'll learn about it in Bava Metzia. Because in some cases we know. The Gemara goes through many possibilities over there. If we have a way of knowing, or if there's a strong reason to assume that the owner has had Yirsh already, that he found out about already, that he lost it.
He knows the owner went to store and bought another one.
To give you one example from the Gemara over there, the Gemara there establishes that when a person has a money bag, he's constantly feeling it to make sure he still has his money. So if he drops his money, he's going to realize very shortly afterward and already have years. What does it mean that it says in the pasuk, "Ki ani Hashem oyev mishpat," because I Hashem love justice. I hate stealing with an oila. What's an oila? What is the pasuk saying? Moshal Melech Basav Adam Shaya Ogra Beis Hamechas. It's like a human king who's passing by the toll booth where they're collecting taxes. Amalaba, Rabbi says to his servants, through Mechas Lamochsim, pay the toll to the tollkeepers. Amrulai, they ask him why. All the taxes that we're collecting all go to you anyway. Amalahem, he says to them, many yomadu kol ovedrach, and let all the other passers-by on the road learn from me. That they should not try to evade paying the tolls or the taxes. So the same thing, Hashem says, Ani Hashem sone gezel ba'ola. I hate when a korban ola is brought from stolen stuff. Now, even though, everything in the world belongs to the Eibishter, after all. Nevertheless, I don't want you to steal something and then return it to me by giving it as an ola. Many yomadu banai, let my children learn from me. V'yavirucha atzmam in a gezel, and they should keep themselves running far away from anything stolen. And Mefarshim says, I think Maharsha says that this is why the pasuk specifically mentions an oila, because an oila goes completely to Hashem, it's completely brought down the mizbeach. Needless to say, the same thing would apply with other korbanos also, where some of it gets eaten by the kohenim and so forth. They should make themselves run far away from, Itmar Nami, they said also, Omer of Ami, Yavish Pasul Mepnei Shein Hader, a dry lulav is Pasul because it's not Hader, Gazel Pasul Mishum Nehavale, Mitzvah Ba Bavera, whereas a stolen lulav is Pasul because it's a Mitzvah Ba Bavera, and therefore, in other words, it's not just an issue of Lachem, so it would be an issue on the first day, it's an issue throughout the 7 days, and therefore it's also an issue even after Yush. Well, please, Yadir Rabbi Yitzchak, now.
So Gazel is also something not really...
No. We're saying two different things. We're saying that the first two things in the Mishnah, one is Mitzvah Ba Bavera, and one is Hadar. One has nothing to do with the other.
Isn't that it when you said it's for the 7 days,
They're talking about Korbanos anyway, but they're talking about Korbanos, that people are bringing Korbanos to stolen animals, and we're saying you're not allowed to do that. But that's the thing. If we're saying that the problem is mitzvah ba ba vera, then it applies during the 7 days. As opposed to if we say it's an issue of lochem, then not necessarily. Then it might only apply the first day. So therefore, pliga de Rabbi Yitzchak, this that we just said that Rabbi Yochanan was saying and Rabbi Ami was saying that it's a problem of mitzvah ba ba vera, which implies therefore that the problem all 7 days is sukkahs. Rabbi Yitzchak says no. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nachmeni Amar Shmuel Lo Shano Ela B'Yom Tov Rishon. This that we're saying that a stolen lulav or other minim are possible is only on the first day. Avav B'Yom Tov Sheni, but on the other days of Yom Tov, Mitzvah Sheyotze B'Shol. Since you can be yotze with a borrowed lulav, and that's a given, everybody agrees to that. Yotze Nami B'Gozel, you can also be yotze with a stolen lulav because it does not have to be lochem.
On the first day, you cannot be borrowed.
You can't borrow a lulav on the first day. You have to do Matan Amanat Mahatu. We'll learn about it in a couple of weeks.
Not to make a kinyan, or
you borrow it, you make a kinyan on it, and then you return it. Masiv Rav Nachmeis, folks. Rav Nachmeis, folks, asks, what do you mean? The Mishnah says lulav agazov ayavish pasul. The Mishnah mentions a stolen lulav and a dry lulav are pasul, which implies hashohu kosher, which would imply but a borrowed lulav is fine. Now we have to consider when is that emas? When is that? Ilema b'yavta b'rishon. You're going to say it's on the first day of Sukkot. The first day of Sukkot, a borrowed lulav is no good. Haksib lachem. Which means it has to be Mishalachem, it has to be yours. V'hai labdi dehu. This lulav does not belong to him. So the Mishnah cannot be talking about the first day, because then instead of mentioning gozel, lulav gozel, the Mishnah should have started out. Lulav shol is possible. And obviously we'd know that it means if a borrowed lulav is possible, how much more so a stolen one? Ela lav v'yam tov sheni. So the Mishnah must be talking about the second or the rest of the days of Sukkot. V'katani gozel possible. And we see that it says that a stolen lulav is possible. Only a stolen lulav, therefore the Mishnah doesn't mention a borrowed one, because the second day a borrowed one is takakasher, which implies, though, that a stolen one is possible all 7 days. So that works according to Rabbi Yochanan and according to Rabbi Ami. How does that fit with what Rabbi Yitzchak and Shmuel are saying? The answer is, Rava Amar La'olam B'yom Tov Rishon. Actually, the Mishnah is, after all, talking about the first day. And V'loy M'Boyakam, on the contrary, the reason why the Mishnah mentions a stolen lulav is because there is a chiddush in it. It's a needless to say thing. In other words, the Mishnah is mentioning the less obvious case. There's a reason why a stolen lulav is less obvious, is more of a chiddush than a borrowed lulav. We were thinking to say that if you can't use a borrowed lulav, obviously you can't use a stolen lulav. But no, Rava is pointing out you can actually take the logic the other way. The Mishnah did not need to mention on the first day that a borrowed lulav is possible. Jalavdidehu, because it's not his. Ava guzzle, but when it comes to a stolen lulav, Ema, you might have thought, Sam gzela yirsh bailim hu. You might have thought that a normal case of gzela involves yirsh bailim, because again, as Rashi says, that gzela, the definition of gzela is that he grabs it right away from him. So we would assume the guy immediately has yirsh. Uchadidei dummy, so therefore maybe it should be considered like his. Kamash halam, that would be the chiddush of the Mishnah. So on the contrary, the Mishnah may well be talking about the first day, and there's no proof that the Mishnah is saying that a stolen lulav is possible on the other days. Because once it's yours, exactly. In other words, so the point of all this is, again, that we're disagreeing with the previous point, that it's a mitzvah bab avera, and therefore it's no good all 7 days, and therefore it's no good all 7 days of Sukkot. No, we're saying that according to this way of looking at it, it's only a problem that if it's before Yirsh, even when it doesn't belong to him, from the second day and on, it's not necessarily an issue, because from the second day, you don't need lochem. And mitzvah bar baveda, apparently we're not so concerned about. Because miyash means just that. He may hate the guy. He may want to even come. He may want to even come and sue him in Beis Din to get back the value of it. But he's been miyash on getting back the thing itself. So therefore, the thing itself now becomes the Gazlan. So Tosfos points out the reason why we would say that, the reason why we would say that mitzvah bar baveda is not a problem, Tosfos says, is because here we're talking something which is only drabanan anyway. Again, the rest of the days of Sukkot, except for the first day, outside the Beit Mikdash, taking the lulav and esrog is only drabanan. So therefore, on a thing drabanan, we're not necessarily worried about mitzvah bar baveda. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan would say that we apply mitzvah bar baveda even then. You still have a mitzvah bar baveda because you acquired it through an avera. Now you do have the case, which is what we're going to talk about now, and what the Gemara is going to talk about now. You can have a case where the gazlan gave or sold it to somebody else who has not committed an avera. Then not necessarily is it a mitzvah bar baveda.
For the third party.
For the third party, right. So in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about all these things, that a stolen lulav, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, it is possible all 7 days, but if it's given or sold or whatever to a third party, then that third party hasn't committed an Aveira, directly anyway. Unless if they knew, maybe that's different, yeah. But therefore. Amalahu Rabahuna Lahanu Avankavi. Rav Huna said to the Avankari. So Rashi explains that Avankari is Tagare called Dovali Stakabai. They're merchants who buy and sell all kinds of things to make a profit, doing kelim ktanim, like little dishes, machtin, needles, masrekas, and then combs, bilolavim, makoyin marinish, basically peddlers. Basically, like peddlers or people like who have like variety stores or whatever. So, you know, like little, I don't know. Rabbeinu Hananel says a little differently, that it means that avankari means like people who work for the nasi, and people who work for the nasi or the reish galusa, that he has like important people looking after his affairs. Anyway,
not Vikings.
What?
Sure, that's not Vikings.
No. So anyway, so Rav Huna says to these avankari who were Jews, kizav nisu osa me'akum, when you're buying hadasim from the goyim, you yourselves should not cut them from the ground. You should let the goyim cut the hadasim from the ground. And then they should give the hadasim to you. My timer, why is that? An average goy in those times was somebody who steals land. Now Rashi points out that we're talking about that the land, therefore we don't know, the land that we're talking about over here where these hadassim are growing may have belonged to a Jew. Now, many Mephoshim ask, why specifically does Rashi need to point that out? I mean, if it was stolen from a Goy, the same dinim it would seem would apply also. So we'll learn the next couple of lines of the Gemara, and then I'll explain some different things that Mepharshim should say about it. So this land may have belonged to somebody else, a Jew or a Goy, as the case may be. And the problem is, v'karka ein nigzelis, land, the halacha, cannot be considered to be stolen. Meaning, if a ganav or a gazlan steals somebody's wallet or his cow or his car or what have you, eventually they'll be yush. Eventually the guy will give up hope of it. He's not going to get it back. And at that point, the gazlan acquired it. Karka always stays, I mean, it always stays where it is. It always stays under the chazaka of its original owner. So therefore, there's no yush, even the person always knows that he has a chance of getting this land back because it is there after all.
And the produce of the land.
The produce of the land is different. One second.
We're talking about the produce of the land.
No. We're right. But one second. But that's the issue. So here's the thing. The land itself and anything that's attached to the ground cannot be considered stolen. The ganav never acquires title to it. Once produce is picked or cut from that land, that's when the shinui takes place in it. That's when the change in it takes place. Where then there can be yirsh on it. So now what happens? Hilchach l'gzuzuhayinu. So therefore, let these goyim who own or who we think might be squatting on this land, let them cut off the hadasim. This way, the action that causes yirsh to take effect is taking place through them. Again, because when does the owner have yirsh on these hadasim? When they're cut from the ground. As long as they're attached to the ground, then there's no yirsh on them. No. We're saying they may already be gazlanim. So therefore, if you were to go and cut the hadassim from the ground, then you are the one who's directly doing the act of gezel from the original owner. Because all this time, these hadassim attached to the ground are still considered in the owner's possession.
But you may not know about it, and we figure that if you don't know about it...
No, because that's what we're saying. Kauka ain't an exelus. Because land...
But you can still assume that it's the land...
No, you cannot assume that there was...
You have to assume
that there was no yirsh, because since the land always stays where it is, the owner is not going to have yirsh on it. Now, Tosfos discusses, okay, there are cases, for example, you can have where the land was stolen 100 years ago and nobody remembers nobody remembers who the original owners were. That's different. But we're talking about the average case where a plot of land is stolen and the owner is still very much aware of it and is working to try and bring the case to Beis Din or to the courts or whatever, or even if he's not trying to, but at least he has hopes maybe of one day being able to pay the guy off and getting his land back or whatever.
Maybe it's
changed
the deed 100 years ago.
Yeah.
The area of the land that was stolen. Some of it belongs to the original owners. If he's not sure about the area,
I don't know. No, we're talking about the whole plot of land,
Pashtus. But if there's one that changed the deed 100 years ago,
there's no way to. Fine, that's what I'm saying. 100 years ago is 100 years ago. We're not talking about that. We're talking about we're not saying for sure that it was stolen, because after all, if for sure it was stolen, then we can't necessarily use this loophole either. The whole point is that when it comes to the dinim of gezel, we can assume, we don't have to assume that the Pnei Yeshua points this out. We don't have to assume that the goy stole the land. There's a possibility of it, but therefore we don't have to worry so much about that to the extent that we're not even going to buy any of the produce from it. But on the other hand, when it comes to the mitzvah of lulav and esrog, where it has to be lachem, and according to the first opinion, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it has to not be mitzvah ba avera, then you have to consider the possibility that after all, maybe this land was stolen.
Well, what is it they're going to do? They tell the goy to first cut from the ground.
So they tell the goy to cut the hadas from the ground. So therefore, what happens is the yirsh is done through the goy.
And then you cut to your right side.
One second. Vishinui, and then the change of ownership happens by you. Because, in other words, what we have is like this. Before, we were talking about the idea that yirsh by itself is enough for the ganav to acquire what he stole. That's not so simple. The Gemara talks about in Bava Kamma that the Gemara talks about in Baba Kama that there are opinions, and I believe this is the halacha, that you need both. You need Yush and you need Shinu Yushus. You need that it changed hands. The original Ganav himself, even after Yush, doesn't acquire title to the thing he stole, doesn't have a kinyan on it. Only if it gives or sells or whatever it to somebody else, then that somebody else is able to be koneh once the original owner had Yush. That's what we're saying over here. You need both. You need Yush and you need Shinu Rishus. You don't want that the Yush, which effectively is when the Gezel takes effect, should happen through you, because then you're going to be the Gazlan. So therefore, let the guy already who we're suspecting may have stolen the field, let him be the one to actually cut the Hadassim. He then goes and gives it to you. Now you have both Yush and Shinu Rishus. He accomplished the Yush. You accomplished the Shinu Rishus. And now you're good.
The goy,
isn't it? No. Because the goy already owns the land. We suspect that he took, right. So again, like the Bnei Yeshua says, we don't know for sure that he did. So when it comes to the dinim, Lulav and Esrog, we want to be careful. That's why we have to go through this kind of thing. When it comes to we don't have to assume on a day-to-day basis necessarily that he stole it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be allowed to buy these hadassim from him at all. So you might ask, why? So, why do you even need that? After all, these Avankri are buying Hadassim in order to resell them. That's the whole point. Rashi said that they're retailers. They're going to buy Hadassim from one place and resell them someplace else. So Soif, after all, Kigazu Avankri, even if the Avankri themselves cut the Hadassim, what's the problem? They have a Yirush Bailim Biadaihu. So they have, the Yirush Bailim happens through them, but Vishinu Rishus Biyadvan. And then the Shinu Yeshuas happens through us when we buy the Hadassim. We're the third party. So fine, what's the problem? So we're not doing a mitzvah ba ba veda at that point. We're allowed to use those Hadassim. Why does Rav Huna have to tell them to have the guy cut the Hadassim? Either way, you still have three parties involved. You have the original owner of the field, who we assume that it was stolen from. We have the Avankari cut it. And we have you, who's buying it from him. So what's the problem? The answer is, you're right, but what we're talking about is, what about the Hashinus, meaning the Hadassim, they used to call the Dalad Minim in those times Hashina, because we carry him by the Hashinus. When we're talking about the Dalad Minim of the Avankari themselves, then you only have two parties involved, the original owner of the field, you know, and the Avankari, who's buying the Hadassim. So if he himself is buying Hadassim for his own use from the guy, then you, not on sales, and that's the point. He's not selling them. He's keeping them for himself. Then, if he himself were to cut them from the ground, you don't have Shinu Rishus. It hasn't changed hands. So therefore, it would still be considered a stolen hadas. And it would be possible. By having the guy cut it, therefore at that point the Yush happens. And he's been buying it from the guy. Where then you have the Shinu Rishus. Now, we're covered.
Ravuna, when he made that statement, he was telling you for the one personal use, you've got to get the goy to cut it.
But exactly.
If you're going to sell it to anybody else, you don't care.
Then technically you don't need to, right. Question is, the Gemara asks, we have another thing that allows a ganav or a gazlan to gain to kinyan on what he stole, and that is shinui maita, a change in the actual physical thing itself. Namely, a classic example of it that the Gemara mentions in the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about in Bava Kamma is, for example, a person steals wool and dyes it. So then, even if there hasn't been Yush yet, at that point, he's kind of it. He doesn't have to return the dyed wool. He just has to return the value of the original undyed wool that he stole.
He'll never be able to recognize.
No, I'm just kidding. He'll never be able to recognize because there's been a shinui to it. There's been a change. It's not the same thing anymore. This comes up in other areas of halacha also. For example, there's a din, the Torah says in Parshas Kisei, that you're not allowed to use Esnan Zoyna or Mechir Kelev. You're not allowed to use the things that were used to pay a Zoyna, or things that were something that was used to, in exchange for a dog. Like, you know, I want to exchange my dog for your sheep, for example. The sheep is possible for a carbon. But if the thing that was used, if the thing that was exchanged for the Esnan Zoyna or Mechir Kelev was changed, then you are allowed to use it for a carbon. You use, for example, you exchange, you know, I have a pile of wheat, you have a dog, let's make a trade. Then I take that wheat and grind it up into flour. I'm allowed to use that flour for a korban mincha. There's been a shinui now. So the same thing, when it comes to gezel, there's the same concept that a shinui makes a kinyan. So why don't we say, therefore, that there's been a shinui? When you take the dalad minim and you bind them together, that's a shinui. So the lichnei b'shinui maisa, why doesn't he acquire it by shinui maisa? The answer is, Kasava lulav ein sarach eged, because Rav Huna holds that the dalad minim do not necessarily have to be bound together. We touched on this earlier in the Masechta. We'll have much more about it. We'll have much more about it next week. That's Hashem. That there was a machloikas tanoim. Do you actually have to bind the minim together? And if you don't, then it's possible, or not. Is it kosher even if you take them individually? So if you don't need to bind them together, then there's no shinui ma'aseh. The imtim salaim lulav tzarech eged, or even if you want to say, according to the opinion, that a lulav doesn't have to be bound, shinui achoy zulav b'riyasehu. Okay, but it's a shinui that can be undone. It can be brought back to its original state. An example of a shinui achoy zulav b'riyasehu is, let's say, for example, somebody steals pieces of wood and assembles them into a cabinet. Now, the cabinet can still be taken apart into their original pieces of wood. So that's not considered a real shinui. And Itaka has to return the cabinet. So the same thing over here. Just because you took hadasim that we're considering may have been stolen and bound them into a lulav, you can unbind the lulav, and then the hadas is back like it was. So therefore, that's not considered a shinui. Okay, the Gemara says, "Look, niyor b'shinui hashem." How about here's another possibility? Bikoine it by it changed its name. Here's another thing that a ganav or a gazlan can be koine something. Not only if the physical object itself changed, but if it changed in a way that now it has a new name. Where again, the name change is not reversible. No, the Gemara learns most of it in Pavakama from Sokim. Because originally it was called Asa, which is the Aramaic word for a hadas, and now we call it Hashina. Now we call it, to put it in modern terms, we used to call it a hadas, and now we call it Dalad Minim. The answer is, Me'ikra Nami, Asa Hashina Karalei. That's not true. People do sometimes call hadasim, even beforehand, they call them hashina. Because people know what the common use of hadasim is for dalad minim, so therefore even while they're still growing, or when they're still picked, or whatever, when they're first being sold, people already call them hashina. So therefore, there's no shinui hashem involved over here. So the only way, so again, out of all the different ways that we had for ganav to make a kinyan on the thing, we have yirsh. And that's accomplished, again, by cutting them, because until they're cut, there's no yirsh. And, you can't have a shinui, because no permanent change is made to these hadasim. They may not even have to be bound in the first place. There's no shinui hashem, because they don't necessarily change their designation. So the only other thing you have is shinui reshus. And therefore, again, the avankari, if they're keeping these hadasim for themselves and not selling them to somebody else, then they have to make sure that they themselves are the third party, that the original nigzel is the first party, the goy is the second, and they're the third. And in that way, they avoid the issue. The nigzel is the one it was stolen from, right? Now, I mentioned before that Mefarshim talk about the question why Rashi had to specifically say that the land may have been stolen from a Jew. Wouldn't it be the same din if the land was stolen from a goy? There's also a mitzvah to return something that was stolen from a goy to him. So there are a few different opinions about that. The Nesivus actually wants to say that midaraisa there isn't a requirement to return a stolen thing to a goy. You're not allowed to steal from a goy. That's a given. Everybody agrees to that. But to return something that was already stolen, the same he holds the same way as, for example, there's not a mitzvah to return to do hashavas aveda to a goy. The same way there's not a mitzvah to return him something that was stolen from him. Midrabanan, in a case, mishum eva to make a kiddush Hashem or whatever. Yeah, but not midaraisa. So therefore, Rashi has to specify because the land may have been stolen from a Jew, because if it was stolen from a guy, then not necessarily would you even have an issue in the first place. Midaraisa, any of those hadasim can be considered yours, or rather they can be considered the property of the guy who stole it. That's one possibility. Having said that, though, most other Rishonim do say that there's really no difference whether it was stolen from a Jew or a guy. Either way, the same din would apply, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. No, not a Shabbos Aveda, but that either way, you still have the same mitzvah to return a stolen object to a goy as to a Jew, and therefore that the same din applies, that the goy who stole the field did not acquire it by that. So therefore, you still have the same issue that you have to have the goy cut the hadassim. One more thing, it does say in Shulchan Aruch on this, and then we'll wrap up, is that we're talking about where, for example, a private person steals a field from somebody else. But you have cases, for example, where a king or where a government goes and then wages war against someplace else and conquers their land. That's not considered stealing in halacha. La halacha, a kingdom, a legitimate king, has the right to wage war and to take captives and to take land and to take booty, etc. And it becomes the property of the kingdom, and he can give it out. No, apparently not. And he can distribute them to whoever he wants from his army or whatever. So therefore, that's not considered gezel.
That's
Any king. Actually, the halacha distinguishes in that regard between a legitimate king and a not legitimate king. The definition in halacha of a legitimate king is one who his coinage is accepted. If people use kings, you know, you see even in countries nowadays that have kings and queens, like England, you know, they have a picture of a king or queen stamped on the coinage. If people use that kind of coin, it shows that they accept this person as their legitimate ruler, and therefore he has the din of a ruler.
Minimum of his land, because some countries nobody will. Called soft currencies. There was not, like, nobody would want it outside. Like,
okay, but if people in that country use that currency, then it shows that they accept him as their ruler. And
Zimbabwe had 1,000.
Yeah, okay.
But still, over there, that's what they use.
But that's what they use, so therefore, that's they you know, the guy over there, the dictator, may be a total louse, but they use his currency, so therefore, it's considered, yeah.
He just became 90.
All right, whatever.
90.